Any question? Yes, Monique.
I'm not a specialist on this domain, but I have very simple questions. On part three of your talk, when you were changing the mass of the particles, saying that having freezed the position means that it's like if you change a mass and you have a kind of infinite mass. Mm-hmm. In your simulation, if the mass of one particle is infinite, it means it will be an attractor for the other particles. Have you done that in your simulation? Because of the gravity? Up to which level? Yeah, in the real physics, you have a body with infinite mass, for the small ones, it would be an attractor. And so I was wondering if you have this kind of simulation too.
So in these examples, the potential energy that we simulated was not the gravitational energy.
Uh-huh.
So the force applied on each atom did not depend on the mass of the objects. So there was no attraction effect.
Okay.
Now if we were doing gravitational simulation of a galaxy with the same approach, then we would not use the adaptive mass, we would use the regular mass.
Okay.
What's new in this approach is that when people want to simplify simulations, they change the potential. They change the V. But it's very difficult to change the V because it's a full-time job. Basically, some people spent years on designing good models. Erwin Pfau told you about that, actually, when he said that there could be errors in the models. It's actually biophysicists who try to design force fields like Charn, Amber, Gromax, etc., which are good approximations of what happens in reality. Here, we can just take any existing model, Charn, Gromax, etc., if people are happy with it. We just change one number, the simplification threshold, and we can speed up a simulation. And we can prove that we get the same result. And we have shown that in some examples, we go 10 times faster. For example, if I just go back to the first slide. Here you do a simulation. You have a plague and you simulate a shock. And in the first example, you have the reference simulation. And the more you simplify, the faster you go. And you see that you have a progressive degradation in the quality of the simulation. But it might be good enough for your purpose. So we think that maybe one day people will use this type of approach to prototype simulations themselves. And apparently it's the first time this type of approach exists for particle systems. Because for finite element simulation, for example, you can just change the mesh, just in quotes, because it's difficult to change the mesh. But you can change the mesh, use less tets to go faster. But here, if you try to use less particles, it's difficult because you should change the V. So now you have a way to not change the V, just change one number, and you trade off between precision and speed. And that's very, we think that that's going to be very useful. We hope.
You just mentioned it, but how do you know about the accuracy of the adapted model with respect to the reference model? Do you have some mathematics behind which say that within some bounds, if you don't adapt too much the model, then the simulation is going to be close to the reference model? Or?
So that's going to be task one. You know, this ERC just started, actually. It's here. It's task one. So you have two types of simulation. Either you try to do simulation with constant energy, so stable simulations, or you try to do simulation with constant temperature. And then you predict statistics, like the average size of the polymer, or the speed at which the ion goes through the channel, for example. We know that if we try to do constant energy, what we will do actually is not constant energy, it's constant adaptive energy, so there will be a divergence between the two trajectories. But since the Hamiltonian converges to the original Hamiltonian, we think that normally the trajectories should converge towards the original trajectories, right? But because it's a chaotic system, this divergence will explode anyway. But on this example, this shock that propagates, we see that it behaves well. We have to do many more tests. But that's only for constant energy simulation. If you do constant temperature simulation, then you don't have to worry, because your thermostat actually makes sure that everything is preserved and you get exactly the same number. It's really 10 lines of math. It's just because you divide up and down by by the same number. And it's very simple to prove that anyway you will get the same results. So that's fine.
Okay.
Even though it's not the same trajectory.
Just a naive question. So you gave some examples of nano devices. Mm-hmm. What about the reliability? Because I can understand that in a macro device, something can break. And for a nano device,
what? I am not a nano designer.
Yeah, I know. But it's a naive question.
I think it's a very good point. The thing is that if in a test tube you can make billions of nano smiley, mm-hmm. even if 2% of them are bad,
you don't care.
Yeah, you don't care.
Okay.
Plus, people will have to deal with the temperature. Mm-hmm. I'm always vibrating because of temperature, but nobody sees it because mm-hmm. it's a very small motion. But on the atomic scale, things are always vibrating. But we have stable proteins in our bodies mm-hmm. that are stable, even though everything is vibrating. So people will have to take that into account, do simulations at a given temperature, and see if the molecule is stable. Mm-hmm. But it's actually something that's already done when people try to design a new drug. At Sanofi, for example, if they design a drug, they try to design a drug that's going to fit and hold in the protein, and they want to see if this is stable, if this is reliable, in mm-hmm. a design vocabulary. So they do a long simulation, and if they see that after 2 nanoseconds the drug goes out, then it's not reliable.
Okay. Okay, so thank you very much again. So this concludes the afternoon. So tomorrow morning we will start at 9 o'clock. And enjoy the evening.